Welcome to episode 649 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a spotlight episode on Uncanny X-Men number 6, the weekly series coming out from Marvel right now, which is basically setting up a new status quo for the X-Universe going forward. Issue 6 is written by Matthew Rosenberg, Kelly Thompson, and Ed Brisson. We have art by Ilda Ray Sinar, colors by Rochelle Rosenberg, letters by Joe Caramagna. So far, we have learned that X-Men, Nate Gray, has returned to this reality of the Marvel Universe. For those not familiar, he was a character that was created in Age of Apocalypse. Could be argued that he was the most popular of those characters that were created during that event. And of course, that whole alternate reality spawned out of the crazed mind of Legion David Haller, who was one of Charles Xavier's children. So he ended up with his own series. He was a good guy ever, as far as I know, all the time, until he shows up here wanting to remake the world, bring about world peace. And he's forcibly assembled an advisory council, and he's trying to be representative. And what I mean by that is when he creates this council, he kidnaps Kitty Pryde, leader of the X-Men, as kind of the pro-mutant voice. And he also kidnaps Senator Allen, who is a supporter of an X-gene vaccine, which is supposed to basically prevent latent X-genes from occurring in people so they won't become mutants. So he's sort of the anti-mutant, or the anti-homo superior side of the council. And then representing mutant supremacy, I suppose, or maybe just bat crap crazy, is Apocalypse, which really goes to show just how powerful X-Men has become. The fact that he's able to not only kidnap Apocalypse, but hold him prisoner indefinitely. So X-Men also recruited four new horsemen, including the Angel, Warren Worthington, to be his horseman of salvation. He also recruits Magneto, Blob, and Omega Red. He sends them out in the world to one group, Omega Red and Blob, to stop the progress of humanity in terms of technology. X-Man says we've poisoned the planet far too long in terms of the environment. And so he sends those two horsemen out to sort of balance the scales. And they start off by attacking oil rigs and causing rapid growth of vegetation and plant life to try to reclaim the earth for nature. Magneto and Angel, on the other hand, are sent out to stop conflict between fellow men, but not necessarily in the way that you would think. And in fact, some of the things they do actually promote conflict. So for instance, they go to a country in Eastern Europe that's been at sort of an impasse as far as the rebels and the army, because they both have weapons, right? And neither one is willing to sacrifice their lives for what they believe in. And so there's this tenuous ceasefire. Well, once Magneto goes and removes all the weapons and there's no threat of imminent death, then all of a sudden these two factions are at each other's throats. So in a way, they've sparked even more violence in their attempt to sort of stem violence. So we saw a couple of different teams of X-Men go after these various horsemen to differing degrees of success. Jean Grey and her team were able to rescue a lot of the workers from this oil rig, but they weren't able to stop Blob and Omega Red from basically destroying the oil rig and having it overgrown with vegetation. So now that these two different factions in Eastern Europe are at each other's throats, the X-Men led by Storm, that team, are trying to find a way to reach Angel or Magneto and get them to stop what they're doing, stop the fighting. And we saw at the end of last issue, Betsy Braddock, Psylocke, is kind of at her wit's end. She doesn't know how else to reach Warren, so she unleashes this huge, massive psychic strike to release Angel's dark persona, Archangel, which is where this issue picks up. And all I'll say is Warren is not happy. He spent his entire life ever since Apocalypse first kidnapped him and turned him into Archangel, trying to suppress that side of himself. So this issue starts off with Angel actually attacking Magneto, and Magneto saying, "Don't allow the X-Men to contaminate you this way. You were meant to be more than just another instrument of war," which is really what he is when you're talking about his Archangel persona that was created by Apocalypse. He's gone from being a horseman of salvation to a horseman of war. And Magneto's trying to reach him, but Warren's not listening and basically slams into Magneto with all his force and kind of knocks him out. And Jubilee's like, "Whoa, Angel's not going to kill Magneto, right? I mean, we should stop him, right?" And I love what Betsy says. She says, "Well, you know what? Let's let Angel hurt him a little bit before we stop him." So Magneto's not really hurt, and he uses a kind of a force blast to throw everybody away from him and implores Angel again, "Don't do this. It's not what we stand for. Look inside yourself. You know this to be true. I'm not going to fight you. Come with me. We can go back to X-Men, and he can fix this, please." And Warren's answer is no. And Magneto says, "You know, I just don't believe you're going to go through with this, right? I have faith that you," and I guess he's going to say, "that you'll come with me." And Angel again says, "The answer is no." And he flings a bunch of the razor knives of his feathers, whatever they are, at Magneto. And Magneto says, "I'm disappointed," as he raises a shield to block all those razors coming in. Turns his back on Warren, saying to the X-Men, "You know, he was at peace and you stole that from him. X-Men gives his gifts for a purpose that you can't understand yet. And now you're going to have to live with what you've done to Warren." And as he says that, he disappears. And Warren, even though he wouldn't join Magneto, he agrees with Magneto. He's like, "Magneto doesn't lie. I'm never going to forgive you for what you've done here, Betsy." And Betsy's like, "Warren, we had to stop you and stop this fighting. The innocent people were being hurt." And Warren says, "You turned me back into an angel of death, the one thing I've been trying to outrun forever." And we know how much Betsy cares for Warren. So for her to have done this, you know, she just felt she had no other choice. And she says as much. She's like, "There were no other options. We needed you back." She says, "I'm not back. Archangel's back. You put the monster back in control. You damned me. I'm in a living hell." And Storm tries to step in, and Betsy says, "I can handle this." She says, "No, you can't. Not right now. You did what you had to do, but you're too emotionally invested. You're too close to Angel. You have... you know, personal feelings for Warren. We've got to move quickly. We don't have time for this." So Betsy agrees to let Storm talk to Angel, and Storm just bottom lines it. She's like, "Warren, tell me, are you loyal to the X-Men? Are you loyal to Nate? Are you going to help us, or do you still follow X-Man?" And Warren's answer is, "I'm undecided." And at that moment, Jean Grey, Bishop, Iceman, that team shows up, and Iceman, in his typical fashion, immediately sticks his foot in his mouth. "Hey, guys, what'd I miss? Whoa, Angel is..." And X-23 says, "Read the room, Bobby." And all Jean wants to know is he with us again? And Storm says, "Well, apparently he's undecided, but he's out from under X-Man's control for whatever that's worth." And she asks how Jean's team did, Blob and Omega Red. And Jean says, "Well, we're able to save those on the oil rig, but by the time we finished, Blob and Omega Red had already departed. We lost track of them. But that being said, have you had any luck in finding X-Man?" And they haven't. So Storm turns to Warren and says, "Okay, you know, it's time to make a decision. Will you help us?" So apparently the answer is yes, because as we turn the page, we're in British Columbia. We know that to be the headquarters of X-Man. And Warren brings them right to the stronghold, which looks like a cross between something Asian and something ancient Greek. And the X-Men immediately head for the entrance. As Storm says, "Well, no need hanging around waiting for an invitation." And Magneto is there at the bottom of the steps, along with Omega Red and Blob, saying, "You won't proceed any further." And I love what Jubilee says. "The line is, you shall not pass, Gandalf." Because that's certainly what Magneto looks like right now, with his long hair and his long white beard. And of course, keep in mind, Sir Ian McClellan played both Magneto and Gandalf, so a little nod to pop culture there. And Jean says, "We're here to see X-Men." Magneto says, "We know," and he knows. for he knows all, but this is a place of worship, a place of peace. We're not going to let you desecrate these grounds with your presence. And Jubilee's like, didn't we just beat you guys? Do we have to go through this again? And Jean says, we don't want to fight. We just want to talk. And Magneto says, we will not ask again. You need to leave. And Jean says, what's he hiding from? Is he afraid to face us because he knows he's wrong? Magneto says, you know, he's so far above any petty emotions. And Jean's response to that is, well, then why does he hide? And then we see X-Men appear telling Jean, I'm not hiding. Say what it is you have to say and then either join me, join my side, or be destroyed to make way for what's right and what is necessary. And the X-Men, I think they're almost surprised to see X-Men, to see Nate Grey just immediately there in their presence. Because Bobby's like, well, when you put it like that, it's such a great offer. Jean starts trying to talk to him, saying, Nate, he says, do not use that name. And she's, you know, she's trying to appeal to that side of him. I mean, in another reality, she is his mother. So, and she presses on with that, saying, but your name is Nathaniel Grey. And of course, X-Man knows exactly what she's trying to do, saying, you're trying to remind me of this biological bond we share, but you're mistaken. In another world, yes, in another reality, I might have been your son, but that means nothing. Everything's connected, and thus nothing's connected. There are all these different realities and different outcomes and different futures. And you try to put so much priority and importance on one that all of a sudden, you know, like if everything's special, then nothing's special. And Bobby again with his remarks, well, that's cheery. And Nightcrawler says, Bobby, hush, just let Jean handle it. And so Jean says, well, talk to us then. Tell us what you're trying to do here. You've always been a hero. We don't understand. You've thrown the world into chaos. People are dying. Like, let us help you. And X-Men says, there's nothing to explain. We already spoke at length, and you agreed that the world had become untenable. And she's like, what? When did I say that? And X-Men reminds her of the coffee shop. And it turns out that older woman that Jean sat down and talked to in the coffee shop was Nate. Nate had taken control of that woman's persona, and that she was speaking to Jean. And just to remind you, that happened in the first issue, and the woman was saying how corporations had grown too powerful, nobody's keeping corruption in check anymore, the poor get poorer, the rich get richer, the gap widens, fear and hatred grow, divisiveness, environments in disarray. It's just the world's in bad shape. And after she had, you know, kind of stated her position, the woman had asked Jean, you disagree? And Jean said, actually, no. But that wasn't all Jean had to say. But then they were attacked and Jean never got to finish what else she was going to say. And so as Jean says, wait, that was you? That was you were the old woman? Nate explains how he borrowed her form. She was a real person who was there that day. And Jean says, yeah, but you walked away before I was finished with what I was going to say. So I say, yeah, I agree with you too. An extent, but there's always hope, no matter how dark it gets. And X-Men says, yeah, but then that old woman died. Where was her hope, right? She was just another mindless casualty in the never-ending war. Well, that war ends now. I will end that war. And Jean's like, but how? How does it end? When does it end? Because in the meantime, you're killing thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands. And it's the old argument from Nate Grey from X-Men that we've heard hundreds of times. We've heard it from Dr. Doom, Toyo Harada, Lex Luthor, you know, all these megalomaniacs who are trying to quote unquote save the world. And it's okay if some people die. You've got to break some eggs to make an omelet. And, you know, it's all well and good. The world will be fine if everybody just does what I say. You know, eventually we'll get there, which is great for all the people that survive. But if you're one of the people who doesn't, then the price is too high, right? What X-Men is saying here is, well, you know, I'm sorry that people have to die, but utopia does come at a price. And, you know, I'll make that same argument every time, that for the people that survive and get to live in the utopia, then yeah, maybe it's worth it. But if you're one of the people who dies or loses a loved one, then it's not worth it. And so unfair for one is unfair for all in my mind. So Jean seems to agree with me. She says there's got to be another way. And meanwhile, Betsy and Storm and Jean are having a secondary conversation telepathically. And Betsy's saying, this man's impenetrable. If the horseman's power really does come from him, all we need to do is stop him, focus on the totality, focus the totality rather of our power on him. If we can subdue him, then the horsemen will go down as well. And Storm says, Gene, what do you, what do you think? And Gene's telepathic response is, his mind's beyond my reach. Nothing I say is getting through. Betsy might be right. And of course, X-Men can sense, he's been reading their thoughts all along. And his response is, Betsy is indeed right, but it matters not. You're going to break against me like waves against a stone. So now knowing what they're up against, knowing that nobody's going to be changing X-Men's mind, Storm orders them to attack. And there's a quick fight because X-Men basically says, so be it, unleashes a giant burst of power, and the X-Men are basically trapped. They're basically floating in the sky, helpless. They're held within X-Men's thrall. And Jean says, Nate, can you put us down? And his response is, so you can attack me again? Jean says, no, so we can help you. Nate's not about to put them down, so Jubilee in her infinite wisdom says, everyone attack again, throws a few fireworks at X-Men, who basically swats her away, saying, Pest, do you really think a light show is going to distract me? Flings her. She goes through one. She enters inside one part of the dome of his citadel and out the other side. And I'm surprised she's not more hurt, actually. She kind of rolls down the hill and says, okay, get back up there, Jubilee. But then before she can, she's all of a sudden attacked by these tentacles coming up from the ground. She's like, wait, really? And before she can extricate herself, there's a voice off panel that says, hey, you need a hand, Miss Lee? And we see that Armor, Pixie, Rockslide, Anole, and Glob have shown up, along with Jamie Madrox, Multiple Man, and Legion. Legion had, you know, we saw last issue that he was able to pinpoint where X-Man was, and now they have arrived. And Jubilee says, what are you guys doing here? How'd you even find this place? And Armor points to Jamie and Legion, and Jubilee's like, no, absolutely not. It's not safe for you. It's not safe for you to be with them. You got to get out of here. And I love Glob's answer. He says, well, we're not the ones getting beat up by the ground. And Armor just starts walking out. She's like, X-Men this way? This way to X-Men? As she orders Jamie to get her free, and they start running off. And again, Jubilee's screaming at him, no, run away, get help. Like, why are they considered X-Men if all anybody wants to do is protect them and won't let them fight? And Armor kind of calls Jubilee on that. She says herself, we're not going to do that. We're not going to run away. We're X-Men. And so when they run around to the front of the temple, they see all the other X-Men are on their knees, tied up with vines grown from the ground. And Pixie says, whoa, this is bad. And Rockslide immediately wants to attack. He says, let's show this hippie. And Armor's like, you know what? No, we're not leading with our fists. Clearly that didn't work for these guys. So she actually tries talking to X-Men. She says, Nate, it's Nate, right? I'm Hisako. And X-Men's like, I no longer go by that name. I'm only known as X-Men. And he's like, okay, great. Another wave of X-Men come to fight progress. And she says, no, we came to talk. And X-Men says, well, that's interesting, coming from Charles Xavier's soldiers. But as he turns, he realizes how young they are, that they're children. And Rockslide again, ever the hothead, well, we're old enough to kick your ass. And Armor tries to defuse the situation, saying, what we mean to say is, don't judge us by how we look, right? Judge us by the experiences that we've already had in our lives, not how long it took. And X-Men, that seems to impress him. He says, all right, tell me, why are you here? He says, we want to understand, like, why are you doing what you're doing? He says, you know what? That's all anybody wants in the end, right? Life, universe, they just want answers. They want to understand. They want to unravel the mysteries of the universe. And she goes, no, but we want to understand you. Like, all the stuff you're doing, you're bringing back these animals that were extinct. You're destroying churches and holy sites. You're taking people's weapons. Like, why? Why are you doing that? And that surprises X-Man. He's like, you know what? No one's actually stopped to ask me that yet, but it's a simple answer. I'm dying. And Glob says, well, you're screwing the world up because you're dying? He says, no, I'm saving the world because I'm dying. I always knew I had limited time, but I never knew how little time I had left until now. And this world's dying too, and it scares me. And I can't save everyone from death, but I can save everybody that survives from a life of suffering. I can change the future. And so you've got to understand, you've got to see people are suffering now. People are hurt. People are scared. And X-Men says, well, change is scary. And Armor says, but how do you know what you're doing is right? You know, like any megalomaniac, I've studied life. All change causes pain. And Armor interrupts him saying, yeah, but how do you know the pain and the hurt you're causing is worth it? How do you know you're not making things worse? Right? And that's, again, the argument that the ends justify the means, which I've never believed to be true. Because again, what price utopia? What is utopia worth if 100 people survive to experience it and everyone else dies? What about 1,000? What about 10,000? You flip it around, right? What if you need to kill 100 people for utopia, for everyone else on the planet to have paradise? Is it worth it? What about 1,000? 10,000? 1,000,000? Like, at what point did the scales become unbalanced? Because I got to say, if you're one of those 100, then it's not worth it for you. You're not around to experience it. But X-Men says, you know, I've got to trust that the ends justify the means. Sorry for any pain I've caused, but I know, I hope that what we're doing, and Legion says, I've had enough of this. You can't reason with insanity. Better to just send them back where he came from. And he says, I banish you, X-Men, to the world you came from. And before anybody can stop him, Legion unleashes his power. And then the X-Men are not in Kansas anymore. We see these five young X-Men. Pixie's looking very demonic. Rockslide is as well. As he's saying, guys, what just happened? Klob actually looks better. And he says, cool. Like, he's got armor. He's much more svelte looking, much more menacing looking. And armor also looks a bit different, as her armor looks much more militaristic. And she says, this is bad. This is real bad. And we see X-Men in the background. And where exactly they've gone, we'll have to wait till next issue to see. So clearly, this is another big X-Men story in terms of Age of Apocalypse-like level storytelling, where we're going to get a different reality. We're going to get a possible future. X-Men is doing what he believes to be right. We still don't know how he gained the powers that he has. He seems so much more powerful than he's ever been in the past. We don't know how he necessarily gained the knowledge of what's going to happen in the future and why he feels so compelled to stop it. And we don't really understand what makes him think that this future that he's creating is going to be better than the one that he foresees. You know, he says, I know, and then changes it to, I hope that it'll be better. He hopes he's doing the right thing. He hopes he's creating a utopia, but does he really know? So I imagine by the time we come out the other side of this event, we're going to have some kind of new X reality, just like we did with Age of Apocalypse. It'll probably come with some different versions of X characters like we've seen in the past. That's how we ended up with the Dark Beast and some of the other characters that have become a staple in the X-Men corner of the Marvel Universe, including X-Man himself. Interesting that the powers that be over at Marvel Editorial have chosen X-Man to be the antagonist of the series. I don't know that we could necessarily call him a villain. And what exactly is he dying from? Like, I would like to understand his motivations a little bit more. But one thing that I will say about this weekly series is it's very quickly paced. I know it's only going to be a 10-week event. And so for that reason, it's paced pretty quickly. But we're not getting the kind of typical big drawn-out X battles that we normally get. This is more of almost a cerebral event. It's a lot of talking and weighing different courses of action versus what their outcomes might be. And so it's very much a thinking man's event, so to speak. I mean, even here where the X-Men attack Nate Gray, we see Jubilee get thrown out of the battle. And then by the time we come back to the battle's over. Like, we got like one page of fight, right? And X-Men basically set off a force blast. All the X-Men were kind of floating in the air, and then I guess he just levitated them down to the ground and tied them up with vines. not 100% sure. So it does have a different feel than some of the X stories of the past, because it is a situation where there are such philosophical differences between some of these factions, and that's kind of where the story is focused, even among the X-Men themselves, right? Like, we saw Jean Grey want to keep the younger X-Men protected and in a way almost turn them into their, like, into a splinter group, right? I wouldn't say they're on the side of X-Man, but they chose to disobey direct orders. They chose to do things their own way because Jean was so kind of set on keeping them at a distance, keeping them out of harm's way, and they resented that in a way. And you can totally understand why they would. I mean, they, for all intents and purposes, are X-Men, but they keep getting the short end of the stick. They keep getting protected, and all they want to do is prove themselves. So I would encourage you all to be sure to read the little sort of essay in the back of the book from the X-Men editor, Jordan D. White. It specifically talks about Age of Apocalypse, that dark parallel timeline that Legion accidentally created when he killed Professor X in the past, and it caused this butterfly effect. And Jordan goes through and starts talking about kind of the ripples that were created when that event happened and how it compares to kind of the story that the X-Men creators are telling now in this universe, and how it might be similar, but at the same time, very, very different. So I've been enjoying the series so far. I will say that I am kind of fiending for some action, because as I said, it hasn't been traditional in terms of action yet. There hasn't been the long protracted fight that takes up, you know, a whole issue where we get to see various parts of the battle, different X-Men facing off against different antagonists. Always enjoy those kind of issues. Reminds me of like classic Dark Phoenix saga when the X-Men were in the blue area of the moon and they were fighting against the Shi'ar, and they all kind of matched up against different members of the Imperial Guard. That's some of my favorite X-Men stories ever. So looking forward to seeing something like that take place in this event before it's all said and done. The other thing I wanted to mention in this episode, is I recently read the X-Men Christmas special, which was called the Merry X-Men Holiday Special. It's an interesting way to do a holiday special. There are basically 25 one-page stories, one for every day of December from the 1st through the 25th, Christmas. And they all kind of stand alone, except there is one that keeps coming back periodically, a story of Jubilee written by Chris Sims and Chad Bowers that's more of a longer-term story. It shows back up, I don't know, maybe five or six times. And then there's a few pages at the end that kind of tell, kind of wrap it up and give us some context into what we saw in the early Jubilee pages. So I will say that when I first heard the idea that the X-Men editorial office got a ton of creators to come on board and tell one-page X-Men holiday stories, I was pretty excited. But I think it doesn't quite, like, it's a great idea in theory, but the execution doesn't always live up to kind of the what you hope it would be. It's a lot harder to tell a one-page comic story that has a payoff than you might think. So some of them are more successful than others. Some of them feel very incomplete. Some of them feel more poignant and emotional and like fitting for a holiday than others. I would say for the most part, they're pretty enjoyable, but some of them are just like, I'm not sure what the point of that was. So I think all in all, I would prefer, if you're going to do a holiday special, just to do, you know, the 4 or 5, 6 page stories, just give the storytellers an idea or an opportunity rather to tell more of a complete story than some of these. Some of them are pretty good, but others leave a lot to be desired. So I'm not going to give a rundown of all the creators because, you know, 25 pages, that's a lot of creators, and it'll just end up sounding like a laundry list. So I probably couldn't recommend it. If you picked it up, I'd be curious to know what your thoughts are on it. Because as I said, some of them are better than others. The art, same thing. Some of them are better than others. And in a situation like this, again, I think I would just prefer to put, you know, four or five top creators with four or five top artists and give us three or four or five stories that are, you know, more complete, more focused on the holidays rather than these one-page stories that don't quite cut the mustard. I mean, I don't know how long these guys had to work on these either. Like maybe with a little more time, it would have felt a little more complete, a little more polished. Because the other thing is that they're all over the place in tone too. So that makes it kind of feel uneven when some of them are so clearly so much better than others. But I did enjoy it. The Jubilee story being the biggest chunk, the one story that kind of continues throughout. It probably was one of my least favorite, actually. Not a big Jubilee fan, but I will say that the art was pretty spectacular. So anyway, if you picked it up, let me know what you think. Very curious to know what some other X-Men fans think of this holiday special. So don't forget to retweet the tweet that announces this episode, as well as send us the code word so that you will be entered to win the prize for this episode, which is the Wolverine Origin trade paperback from writer Paul Jenkins, because this is a 12 Days of the Comic Source episode. So the code word that you need to direct message us is Arcade, A-R-C-A-D-E. Be sure to retweet the one of the tweets that announces this episode, as well as direct message us that code word for a chance to win that trade paperback Wolverine Origin. So that's going to do it for this episode. As always, I want to thank everybody for joining. Please tell your friends about us. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.